I see your dirty face, hide behind your collar. What is done in vain? Truth is hard to swallow. Oh, welcome back, people. Yes, you have landed onto my pad here called Heidi Hollers with me. Heidi Hollers, yes, I know. Well, as I promised, we've got a very cool guest here. I did sacrifice his name a bit, Michel M. Duchamp. I hope I did that good. He's an avid UFO researcher who has fully dedicated himself to finding out answers about his own experiences as well as others. His focus has been fully steadfast, even with personal sacrifice, a not-so-widely-known phenomenon, I've discovered, that is commonly felt among the dedicated in the unknown air arena. So visit his website at www.nouforf.com. Welcome, Michel. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. Thanks.
Oh, gosh. You know, I really enjoyed it. Believe it or not, I always tell people, you know, people could come and be a guest on this show that have experienced extraordinary things, researched things, dedicated their lives. I'm open. And, you know, you're somebody that I met on Facebook and we got into a very interesting conversation and I'm like, dude, you gotta come on the show. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it was, for sure.
Yeah, and I find Facebook's really cool that way.
I'm sorry, what is that?
Facebook's really cool that way, networking with a bunch.
It really is. It really is. And, you know, some of the things that I find fascinating about you, I mean, you are truly somebody who's dedicated to, I don't know, what do we call, ufology, UFO researching. I mean, with your nose to the pavement, you know, every day, all the time, just so focused on finding some answers. I want to know what got you started in researching so avidly on the topic of UFOs.
It kind of started in reverse. I believe I had a sighting when I was 9, but wasn't confirmed until years later when I purchased a book about Canadian sightings, and there was a chapter in there about our particular city and some of the happenings around about the same time, which was way back in 1974 when I was 9. But then I had this weird notion that I wanted to study something as in-depth as possible. And at the time, there was a TV show called Project UFO that was playing on TV. And so I thought, well, there you go. I'll choose UFOs. But I had no idea that I was going to bit off more than I could chew. Because since 74, I've had 27 sightings. I'm one of the very few researchers that actually is able to see both sides of the coin because I've had my own sightings as well as the research.
Right. You know, I think that does add to a person's drive, honestly. I mean, there are the so-called, you know, experts out there, but I did find a large number of them had not had any experiences themselves, but just found the topic to be fascinating. And I'm somebody, again, you know, just like yourself, I've experienced a lot of odd things, and it drove me to look for answers. So I totally respect that, and I get what you're saying. So it from your early childhood experiences on to other UFO encounters, I mean, tell us about some of these encounters that you've had.
Where most of them, I've never seen alien beings per se, but I actually know people I've met over the years that have actually seen them. I've only seen UFOs, but each sighting was different from the last, and it was the behavior that I looked for. It's like people, skeptics mostly, will assume that you've seen a UFO within seconds, but the thing is, I created a page on my website, which is not readily seen, that basically says how to distinguish a UFO from a man-made object in 30 minutes or less, because sometimes you may have to even stand outside as much as an hour or two in order to notice if there's any odd behavior in the light source that you're looking at or configuration of lights in comparison to an airplane seen at night or a helicopter or even a satellite. And then from then on, from the very first time you've actually seen something unusual, the next time after, you're able to know what to look for in a UFO sighting, whether it's lack of sound, direction of movement, its appearance, its behavior, And especially when it reaches the level of high strangeness, like if it does loop to loops, zigzag back and forth, things that our planes and helicopters can't do.
Right. Now, you know, I find something interesting that you just mentioned there, because I've personally seen a ton of UFOs. And, you know, I've stood right alongside of people at UFO days in Dundee, Wisconsin. Hundreds of people go to it. And, you know, you'll see some of these really high-flying looking somethings up in the sky. And, you know, there's the group of people, that's the satellite. I'm like, there are a ton of satellites going across the sky then. And shouldn't they be going at the same, you know, rate and orbit? I mean, like, pace or something. I mean, how can you distinguish, you know, what's a satellite or a UFO? Just on flight pattern or what is it?
It's hard to say. A lot of times, it's as if in some cases UFOs will try to mimic something we have in order not to attract attention. But, satellites are just a very single, pinprick of light that will follow a steady path. UFOs will all of a sudden stop midway and all of a sudden take off in a different direction, as if it were a satellite. The only thing that could have caused that is if it got broadsided by another satellite in order to change direction. So
yeah, I'm sure they're crashing around a lot up there. Kidding. But no, go ahead. You're going to say something else?
No, I'm just saying that that's one of the things you have to look for when you're trying to distinguish something from unusual from something man-made or celestial.
I see. Okay. Yeah, it's, you know, when you say that they mimic things that have been out there, I kid you not, I saw this videotape once at a UFO conference. I mean, the room just erupted in laughter. There was, I guess a couple of guys that were out filming and they saw this very low flying, it was a dark night. So all you could see were these lights in like a formation that could almost resemble a jetliner, but it was very low. It was, I'm bad at judging how high, but I would say, you know, I don't know, three stories or something. And these guys, you hear them talking quietly like, oh my God, oh my God. And they're filming this thing and it almost kind of seemed to point more in their direction. And then, like, turn on the sounds to sound like a jet. You know, all of a sudden, whoosh, you know, and they're just like, no way, dude, we saw you. It was totally silent before and totally started to mimic a jetliner. And they're like, no way. You know, it's just such a blatant attempt to be like, look, we're a jet. I don't know. I mean, just craziness. And I don't know. I mean, if the guys were joking and putting this up there, I they were great actors and it was like 10 years ago. So, I don't know. But, you know, you and I, we had chatted, at length a bit, and something that I find that it's not really known that people like yourself and people like me and others out there that are just digging at these topics, there's such a drive in us to find answers. I mean, what do you feel was this where your passion came from? Because you've been doing this for a long time, correct?
Yeah, since age 10, and I'm 47 now.
Wow.
Yeah, the passion is unbelievable, despite some things that may have happened, like we'd mentioned the one death threat that I once got, and the phone taps and things like that, but that didn't last for a very long time. Although I still joke that my life is a cross between an X-File episode and a soap opera.
Oh gosh, what's with this death threat? What took place with that?
I think it's because in 1990 I had my second sighting and I was old enough to know what I was looking at. And this was at our old abandoned radar base, which is no longer there. And it took me 3 days to gather up the nerves to call the police, which was at the time, before I even joined a UFO group, I thought they were the only people to report things to. And they kept me long enough on the line to determine whether or not I was nuts. And, yeah.
Jeez.
So it happens. But the death threat came out of the blue, I guess, just a few days after or initially before I made the papers for the first time reporting this.
And this death threat came in the form of?
A phone call.
Just a phone call only, and you didn't have, anybody didn't, no one came knocking at the door, though.
No.
Okay, gotcha. Because, I mean, Men in Black, and, I mean, you're in Canada. I don't know if you've got the same creeps running around as we do over here, but, I mean, we've got some strange things happening over here. You know, our government likes to, observe a lot. And bully people quite a bit. So, okay. I think that, I don't know. I mean, every day that I looked into the topics that I did, I don't know, I started off in the ghost topic, growing up in a haunted house, and then moved on over to the UFO topic, and it was so foreign, of course, and so, like, fascinating. But it wasn't that. There almost seemed to be, like, a little voice in my head that was like, the answer is there. I mean, it's gotta be there. And it drove you for 37 years. I mean, what do you think you were looking for?
Mostly, initially I was looking for personal, satisfaction about the fact that these things were real. It took me right up to my 10th sighting before I stopped doubting myself. I would go through my little personal checklist every single time for the first 10 sightings. Is it an airplane? No, it doesn't fly the same way. Is it a helicopter, mm-hmm. satellite, weather balloon, the works? And so after a while I said, well, start looking for stuff or cases where there's physical evidence. And in high school I started what I call my easy access book. I started tracing drawings, pictures from different UFO books, putting all together in one central area, mm-hmm. with the idea in mind that later on I might actually write a manuscript for a book. But the book, not knowing how to lay it out, just 4 or 5 years ago, it was suggested to me that I should create a website instead. So I used the research I'd done. Basically, my website's based on news clippings I collected from 5 Northern Ontario newspapers at the local university on microfilm. That's how everything began. A guy who worked at we have 2 major mining companies here, Inco and Falconbridge, and this was a worker from Inco who had his own sightings in the 60s who suggested I look in the papers for some of the clippings. Well, I had no idea that just for the Sudbury Star alone, I'd find over 350 clippings between June of 47 to December 1989.
Wow, well, that's fascinating. Like, what kind of patterns, if any, have you made note of? I mean, that's helped you to find potentially some answers or led you to believe one way versus another about what's going on with the UFO phenomenon.
Well, that's the thing. There's no set pattern. For a while, there were sightings or wave of sightings taking place almost every 5 years. From 1967 on, well, actually since the 40s, but some years it was totally dead. Like for 1951 and 1955, I barely found any clippings at all whatsoever in the paper. The landing cases, some of them fell on my lap. One I actually got to investigate in one of the Great Lakes on Manitoulin Island back in 1991, which is typical of all the landing sites. That have been investigated where the physical evidence is there. You know, the soil consistency is different at the landing site. There's burnt grass, all kinds of things. And that's the kind of stuff I focus most on because if you watch documentaries today or even 20 years ago, the emphasis or focus on physical evidence is not made as much as you'd like to. And that's what people need to see. Because Carl Sagan used to say, where's the evidence? There is no evidence, therefore there's no UFOs. Well, the physical evidence is enough there that if this was a court case, there'd be enough to put a man away for life without possibility of parole.
Oh, that's a powerful statement. Well, you know, and honestly, I can, you know, understand. I mean, there are too many people that have come forward and put their names and their reputation, scientists and researchers and all sorts of people alike, you know, to vouch for this being a real phenomenon. You know, and over here in the United States, I mean, they've had, how could you say, rules passed, to say, on the law books at one point that said if you're a person that's been exposed to, aliens, you know, you could be, quarantined indefinitely. Yeah. I mean, they took the time to think about it, or to know that something, there may be a threat of some sort. I mean, Ronald Reagan mentioned, I wonder if there's a threat out there, would we come together as a world, you know, to defend ourselves? I mean, we've had a lot of odd, mentionings and things that have popped up, that I just, I'm like, this is not a coincidence, you know? I think, I get kind of tired of hearing, people that hear it, oh, you're in the UFOs. Oh, you know, do you live in a trailer park? You know, do you have all your teeth? Or, you know, they think of it as some, all of us as some kind of oddballs out there that are, biting at the bit to be recognized. And I'm like, look, this takes a lot of courage to come forward and say, yeah, I saw a UFO and yeah, I'm dealing with alien contact, or, you know, it's not something you really want to be known for. And you sure aren't going to make a whole lot of cash doing it. So, I think that, I mean, wouldn't you agree that this isn't an easy thing to stick with all these years you have, correct?
No, it's not. And a lot of sacrifices come along with it too.
I'd love to talk more about that sacrifice, because that was something I enjoyed most in chatting with you on, online is the personal sacrifice that goes with this. This isn't about, compiling and research. There's a lot of thought and heart that goes into this. I mean, what is it, how has it impacted your life?
Well, pertaining to the personal sacrifices, not necessarily the death threat, but at least the phone taps, I thought, this is way back in the early 90s, but even before then, my research, I pretty well used it as an excuse to say, well, I'm not going to be dating anybody, because at the time, ridicule was on an all-time high, and I didn't want to put anybody else, including any potential girlfriend, through this, or having their parents say, well, you're going out with a Looney Tune. So that was the idea that I had in my head. Of course, I could have been wrong, and maybe I regret that decision now, but because I know some researchers that are couples that don't have any kids, but they do this and they're still together. So it's possible to juggle everything together. It's just at the time I just thought it was safe to just stay by myself and just do the research, and then later on finding out, maybe it's not too late now. Maybe it's time to start looking for a life partner or something. So.
Right. No, I told you as well. It's like, it's not easy balancing this stuff. I mean, here I am, this lone, college student. I'm like, talking about aliens and whatnot at my all women's Catholic college. I literally had somebody sprinkle holy water on me and thought it would burn. I mean, I thank God I have the sense of humor I do, because I laughed, and then I'm like, get away from me, I'm possessed, But it cracks me up. I've more or less just, found humor in the way that people will turn their heads and look at me, like, wow, are you serious? But 9 times out of 10, I found, and I don't know if it's because I am a woman, I don't know, but like, I'll get pulled aside and be told about, that person who laughed at me earlier, I have their personal, story of having seen something out of the ordinary, no matter if it's UFOs, ghosts, or whatever. And I'm just always taken aback by it. I'm like, you were sitting there having a good old time trying to rip me a new one and laughing on this. And, you're the most, haunted person I've ever met. it just killed me. I'm like, wow, and that's why I think it's so important that people like yourself come forward and do the work that you do. And, I don't know if you noticed this pattern in pulling all this information together. You've been in this stuff when it wasn't popular, and you put this all into this awesome website of yours that can you give that website again what it is? It's
at www.newforce.com. It's... N-O-U-F-O-R-C-E NORS. It basically stands for Northern Ontario UFO Research and Study, but a lot of the clippings actually pertain to some world happenings as well.
Okay, okay. You know, what I find is interesting, and that's what I was getting to, and you're having been in this for such a long time, have you noticed this pattern, like, you know, when the internet was not, like, so accessible all the time, people got out more often and actually moved their bodies, one foot in front of the other, went to a UFO meeting or met somewhere and talked on this stuff, rather than, gosh, I have a, God, I'm just thinking about something UFO-ish. Oh, let me Google it. Oh, there it is. Well, I'm done. You know, there are just more involved, you know, and people seem rather disconnected, though we are connecting more online in a, you know, in a lot of ways, but as far as like physically, emotionally getting drawn into the research part of it, I'm finding there is a lacking in newer generations, I guess you could say. Are you noticing that too?
Well, for myself, I've pretty well become an armchair researcher of sorts because, first of all, when you go investigate a case on an actual site per se, it's a lot of wear and tear on your vehicle if that's all you've got to use to get around. And basically, I also found out that when you go out purposely looking for UFOs, that's not exactly when you're going to see them. It's when you least expect it. And when you're least equipped, photograph them, or you have no witnesses with you. And so it may be safer to just stay home, and now having the internet to connect to and people worldwide to talk about this stuff with, it may be second best option rather than going out there night after night after night like I used to, which I haven't skywatched in the last 3 years. I've seen enough. I'm leaving it up to the skeptics to have their own sightings now. So.
I love it. You know, it's strange for me, but I've seen a lot of UFO groups in my home state alone of Wisconsin just fall apart more recently because people just are not getting out and being able to attend the meetings. They do meet more online with other people, and it's more of a passing interest. At times, you know, the movies are cool, the TV shows are cool, but, you know, sometimes getting down to the nitty gritty, I'm finding it's fading, and it's a scary thing. I mean, even, I have a UFO group as well, and, I'm not in the same state anymore. It's harder for me to get over there to have the meetings. So it's like, you know, it's a sad pattern of things. And, so I always imagine, I don't know if you saw the movie WALL-E, the animated film, and they show the humans of the future floating around on chairs, and losing essentially, their skeletal, structure and just becoming these big pudgy things that kind of just breathe and don't move much. And it's like, God, I don't want to end up like WALL-E, but, it's just my imagination. But, you know, but I want to kind of focus on what you are saying. You know, you know, personally, it's, you're not in this for the money. You're not in this for notoriety. You're in this for the long haul, correct?
Yeah, and my website's an educational website. That's why I don't charge access to it. Everything is for free download, especially the audio clips of the local people I've interviewed. People can go readily go up there and download those for listening, or even all the documents I placed up there. As a matter of fact, I will be placing up, what just happened, Britain just released 9,000 files, and I managed to back up and save the packages before they start charging. Like, they usually leave a window of a month where you're able to download them, but after a month, you have to actually pay a fee in order to get those British documents.
Get out, and you got them all?
Yeah, 34 packs this time around. There was a few other releases in the last 4 years, and I think I've gotten one or two from before, but I missed out on the other ones, and I'm not going to go and pay for documents that are in public domain. They should be freely accessible to people, and that's why I put all the information and factual data on my site and got rid of all the BS, because I know both sides of the coin, and I know who's the expert researcher and who's some newcomer who may not exactly know what he's saying or doing. So Yeah, people have to watch themselves and get to know who to talk to.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, I know it's 9,000 pages, but did you get a chance to peek at some of it? Did you find anything of interest?
Not yet, but I do have the FBI documents on my own website, and some of them, those are more interesting to read. They're in large type font and like teletype type style, and it's very interesting. The format for the American documents from the Canadian documents is totally different, and yet there's a lot of information on either sets of those, and it's there for the perusing, you know.
Oh, do tell us at least one juicy bit that you found. What have you found in the FBI file?
Well, the FBI file, there's a famous case of the Lonnie Zamora landing case of April 24th, 1964 in Socorro, New Mexico. And with this object, the police officer was chasing a speedster and then saw an explosion. And this was portrayed on Unsolved Mysteries years ago. Very, very well done rendition of the whole case. And the police just veered off the road, letting the speedster go. And when he got on the site, thinking it was a dynamite shack that exploded, there was this egg-shaped object with a red symbol on the side that was landed with four landing gears, and two little people in white coveralls were standing by the object. They saw him coming, packed up and left, and the object was seen later on by a gas station attendant or somebody stopping in for gas at a gas station. So it's a pretty fascinating case. It's one of the more factual cases of physical evidence was found at the landing site. It's a famous case from right. The States. And, yeah.
Wow. Oh, that's cool. Now, when it comes to the Canadian government, I mean, how have they put out information? Have they been a lot more transparent than our government has, or...?
They're sort of getting there. We have, a guy by the name of Chris Rutkowski from Manitoba who does a yearly survey, puts out a yearly survey on the preceding year's sightings in Canada. And now he supposedly is the depository for getting all the files from the DOD, the Department of National Defense. But I don't think that he's necessarily getting everything, including the juicy cases like the radar trackings and stuff like that. Those are the cases that were really, really put the nail in the coffin in terms of saying this is something factual. It is, the whether it's the American or the Canadian government, they do secretly behind the scenes, they do think that it's a threat to national security, and that's why this stuff is not being released or openly talked about from a government standpoint. But there are some document releases. I purchased 5 microfilm reels from the National Archives before they started. I think they closed it down or something. I don't think you can purchase the microfilm reels anymore. I'm not sure, but I bought 5 of them. I don't think it's everything that's ever been printed about UFOs, but it's quite the collection.
You know, it's guys like you that really help make a lot of this information accessible. I mean, had you not done that, would somebody actually go and, you know, pay all the fees for all these different areas that you're able to get into? So, I mean, I applaud you on your efforts on that and making it so accessible. It's fantastic. You know, I have a question for you because, like, I don't know where you stand with this, but I've met some people that are truly, you know, solely into UFO reports and the technicalities of it and gathering the information, but they don't believe in what's ever flying these things visiting people. Are you somebody that believes in alien abductions, or is that something you don't really get into?
No, I've actually interviewed I have a contact actually in Blind River, which is north of Manitoulin Island, who's an abductee herself, and she's been reporting some sightings of late in that area. And I also interviewed a family from Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, who had a lot of similar experiences of what is found in other cases around the world. So I definitely believe that. I believe that they've been around for a long time, possibly having taken part in maybe genetically speaking, maybe in our accelerated development over a certain period of time. A lot of things we could go into that I haven't even created a speculation page, much less what's it's done to my religious beliefs, per se.
Oh, do speculate. You know, your religious beliefs, have you lost them or have you changed them in the face of this? Because I've heard a lot of people that do. So
they've actually been altered. My personal belief is and this is my personal belief, is that Jesus was one of theirs, that the Virgin Mary was artificially inseminated. If you put all this in the context of UFO sightings, there were sightings of some highly unusual things back in the biblical times. Well, Jonah and the whale is one of them, because the guy apparently walked away from the silhouette that was laying on the ocean. And yet there's been all these reports of these mysterious submarines dating back to the 60s that were neither the States or neither the Russians. These are, you know, USOs, underwater, unidentified submerged objects. And
right.
They have the ability to fly, and, but that's one of the stories from, Ezekiel and the Wheel is another one. So basically that's it. I think Jesus was one of theirs because he had abilities that, normal people didn't have back in those days. And who knows? And it's funny, I even investigated a sighting in Blind River and came away with a Bigfoot report, for God's sakes.
You came away with, your voice is getting a little bit distorted, but you came away with what? We've got only 60 seconds to the end of the show, but.
I was investigating UFOs and I even got a Bigfoot report.
Oh, okay. You know, those have been spotted a lot with UFOs, so I can imagine why. But, you know, there's so much that we could talk on when it comes to UFOs and the alien abductions. I mean, I really get into the hand-to-hand, combat with these greys, because, boy, I really don't like those little suckers myself. But never been abducted. Never been abducted. Just don't like them. Okay. This is good. Well, Michelle, I hate to say we've already come to the bottom of our hour. Todd's going to be upset now because he's like, you should have 2 hours, Heidi. But it's all good. But Michelle, you know, keep in touch and perhaps, you know, we'll have you come back on and get into some of the details on what you find on these 9,000 pages of release documents from over the pond. So thank you once again. And Todd's yelling at me. But really, thank you.
You're welcome. Take care.
Well, I'll keep in touch with you. All right, you guys, you're listening to Heidi Hollers and with me, Heidi Hollis. You gotta tune in again next Monday, I think. Yeah, I think I'll be here. So, peace out, people. Monday Meltdown is next. Ooh, you guys better stay tuned then.